Ababa.
Put that Snapple on that windowsill
And just
and
let it chill.
it'd be cold. Be
It's the pot.
cold.
It's y'all. Just y'all are in the middle of a old nigga conversation on the Pop Life podcast. It's just which
Very
always,
old nigga.
if y'all can hear all the stuff we talk about pre-show, it's.
We went from doctor's appointments to the weather to heat. If that is not an old
To
nigga
New York heat.
I seen a
And what kind of heat you got? That's what really made it old. What kind of
what
heat do
kind of
you
heat? The
have?
new or the old heat?
The new heat, the new New York heat, or if you're a New Yorker, you know what we mean by new New York heat versus
Yeah.
old New York heat. I actually wish my radiator was exposed because then I wouldn't even have to clean the humidifier. I could just take a full pan of water and sit it on top of the radiator or sit it
Well,
under the radiator and just let it rot.
let's see how old your apartment is. Do you have the pole in the bathroom?
No,
Had that in the
it's
pre-war.
behind the wall. But I
Had
had
that
it
in
in
my
my
pre-war. I
old,
had it
yeah,
in
I had it in my
the
old bathroom. Like I said, this joint is 75 years old, but yeah,
Inca is
all my
rubbing
old
her
apartments.
brow right
That's where
now,
I get a
and so
Burn mark on
pole
the
in the
back,
arm.
my grandparents' house, our house in Harlem, my
Yeah.
apartment in the Heights, that pole. Listen, that pole get the go. It was so bad in my last apartment. Like I really was like, it's this bitch sounded haunted. Like it would be knocking, like knocking.
The heat,
Crazy knocking. Yeah,
just real quick, none
they
of
needed to
this is
bleed every
normal.
radiator.
This
Yes,
is not
it is. It's
normal.
not normal for you
Not normal for
because you're not
anybody,
from
but people
here.
in New York.
It
Tiny
is,
hole.
yes, but it's normal here.
How you
It's
hating
not.
on people?
It's not normal for
Nobody
people
is
to say.
hating.
It's not normal for people to say pop, but you can't tell nobody from the Midwest that. Like, it's not.
Yeah.
It's normal for here.
It's very normal for you.
It's
Matter of
extremely
fact, at
normal.
this point, if you have that type of apartment, you got a gem.
Yeah.
People say, yo, you got the pole in
Yikes.
the bathroom? But anyway,
Yeah.
Life Podcast today is the 5th
And it's Christmas.
December. It's the new year. We're gonna
Yeah.
take one for the end of the year, and then we'll see y'all sometime in
When
26.
was the last show? Labor Day?
No,
It was warm
it's
outside. It
we.
was summer, nigga. We
No,
warm.
it
Don't.
wasn't. I feel like we taped in October.
You think we
I
might
think so. Like
have?
early October. I feel like we did.
It's been a minute, man.
I
But
might
how
be
y'all?
making. I feel like we did.
How's everybody doing out there? Happy holidays to everyone. I'm in New York for I mean, this is Tuesday. I'm going back tomorrow for some meetings and stuff. And I taped a live podcast at the Hip Hop Museum with Rocky, which was super dope.
Nice.
Yeah, they're supposed to be opening. He said the projected date is 11/26.
No shots, but they done had three projected dates for this opening.
All I'll say is this: they definitely working.
They done
They in
cycle, and they
there.
done cycle, and they done cycled through. I don't know how many different EDs. I'm just saying it. I'm just saying.
They in there working.
It would be
I had to wear a hard hat.
great. It would be great for them to just do soft launches and just don't
Yeah.
put any more dates and just open the museum, because you don't have to open the museum
Don't
in
have to, yep.
totality. Like, you can
Right.
do it in sections. So let's do it in sections and let's start to get a heat check and get a feel. And I feel very confident about what they're doing. We had gone to their previous location, which was much, much smaller, and up in the Bronx. And I mean, just the kind of stuff that they had was just phenomenal. Like,
Incredible.
watch, like, there is a copy of DJ Hollywood's Fever Contract.
That's crazy.
Like, that's just insane, right?
Yeah.
And first of all, and by the way, the nigga was making good fucking bread.
For 79, he was
For
killing
like, yeah, nigga, like,
it.
nigga was getting like 1500 in like 81, my
Oh,
nigga.
he was balling.
I'm like, nigga, I know he was across the bridge over in Jersey somewhere with a brick.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's just dope. They have a lot of they have they had great stuff from K Slay, who many people know as K Slay from being a DJ and being a
Hey,
radio
Slay,
player.
the drama king.
But really, like, dude was a legendary
Graffiti artist.
graffiti artist, right? So it's just it's dope. It's really, really dope, and I really want to see people go there. And it's bigger than just Sugar Hill Gang 1979.
No,
right.
It's way bigger.
Way bigger than that. Way big. And they, like Sean said, some of the, because they were they have an archivist.
I think. Archivist. Yeah.
She was there, and so she was.
Is it Sarita? No, it's not Sarita.
It's a white lady. It was a white lady. Okay. I forget her name. Nice lady, but she was putting some of the stuff in, showing some of the stuff, and it was just like, man, they got so much stuff. It's gonna be like you said. They work, and they got the full staff. They work, and yeah. It takes a long time.
But that's why they need to stop announcing dates.
Yeah, yeah.
To Sean's point, or do like some soft
launches,
like just one exhibit at a time.
They've got. I feel like I'll keep getting this number wrong, but I feel like I saw 575 apartments. Above the museum?
Oh, I don't know.
People are living in there already.
Yeah, right. That's probably.
Well, they broke ground during COVID. They broke ground like six years ago, five years ago.
Yeah, so that was fun, and I had a couple more meetings, one Wednesday and one yesterday, and
So how many podcasts do you do right now currently?
I do two. Mine, Mixed and Mastered, and then I do one with Bun. Well, three.
Us.
Nigga don't even consider us.
He didn't even count. What? That's some bullshit.
Wow.
I'm sorry we ain't one of your little pies with little production companies you can pay for and shit. My bad.
This is always home. It's always home.
Whatever, nigga.
My bad, nigga. We got shaky cameras and.
It's been good to be, just walk around the city. I went to Julian's job. I've never been to his job. I went to his job yesterday. Saw him at that over at Peloton.
I was about to ask. He's still at Peloton. Okay.
Yeah. He runs that whole control room. How they do the classes and stuff. And
oh, edit
stuff and all. Yeah, yeah. So that was cool to see that.
Well, it's been good. Wait, when did you get here?
Tuesday, but I got here.
See,
Tuesday.
I would have had you come to my marketing class. You got to let me know.
I literally went from the airport to the museum.
Okay.
I was like, but I really haven't had any time to do anything, which is why I haven't really called anybody because I don't have.
I understand that.
Then I'm going back to Queens in the evening, so I'm going back. So.
Right.
On the 18th, I'm coming with no meeting. Maybe one meeting, but after that,
my classes will be over by then. But okay. But I still want to see you.
All right, cool. Well, how's your classes going over there?
Next week is the last week of class. This semester went by stupid fast. It went by really quickly. But this has been, I don't want to say my easiest, but I guess I will say my easiest semester to date. Like, I'm finally kind of getting used to
the flow.
And it's also been the first semester that I didn't have to teach something new because I've been covering sabbaticals for other professors. So every semester since I started, I've had at least one new class on my plate, which is hard because I got to customize the syllabus the way I want it. And putting together a syllabus is a lot of work.
Sure.
And every lesson is new. Like, I'm doing all of it from scratch. So at least now, this year, all three of my classes are the same classes I had last semester. So it's still tweaking and changing and adjusting, but it's not going from scratch, which is much easier. But I'm still very much looking forward to winter break. Also, though, just from a student perspective, the students that came in this year, like, because I started teaching with students who experienced high school during COVID, like during shutdown, who didn't have, in person for the key part stuff.
Socializing.
Yeah, like, you see the difference. Every year since I've started, this is the first class who had, maybe the second class, who had a completely normal, quote unquote, normal high school experience. Mm-hmm. And you 100% see the difference. You 100% see the difference in them. It's extreme. But it's good. And it's, for me coming in now I'm having to actually adjust my own pedagogy because that's your teaching kind of style and ethos.
Your big old fancy word.
Sorry. I'm having to adjust it because I had to kind of scale back on how hard I was coming with my classwork. Pause on your behalf, Jeff. How I was going with my classwork and all that stuff. Initially, because I was like, oh, these students aren't ready for this, but now my students can take more challenges and more rigor, and so I'm cranking things up a little bit.
Okay. Well, speaking of more challenges and more rigor, Sean Combs documentary dropped on Tuesday, the 2nd, on Netflix. I have to say, besides getting into the nitty gritty of it, it's just, in my opinion, it's a really well done documentary. It's like, it looks great. It moves, the story moves along. Agreed. All the interviews, of course, there's a lot of editing, but all the interviews are very kind of push the story forward. And even though a lot of the topics we've heard about before, you're getting a deep interview with Kirk Burrows and like a heavy interview with Tim Dog. So Tim Dog's interview is basically, because Tim Dog, people, for those who don't know, Tim Dog was an A&R person at Uptown Records. He signed Lost Boys, did a whole bunch of stuff. He and Puffy grew up, they were neighbors in Mount Vernon. They grew up next to each other. So like Tim knows him since they were like 4 years old or something. They were like kids sleeping over each other's houses and stuff. So Tim is able to give us a lot of insight into how Puffy's was raised, you know, and became, and how it affects who he is now. And then Kirk Burrows, for those who don't know, was the first, I don't know if his title was president or general manager, but he was the first person to kind of run Bad Boy day to day. Puff was one of the visionary, but if you wanted something done at Bad Boy, when you go into Kirk. And he always got it done, by
it
the
was
way.
Kirk Burrows, then Jeff Burrows, not related.
Yeah. Yeah, not
related. Not really. Yeah.
Yeah, but Kirk was an amazing, I would say he was an amazing executive, because his follow-through was incredible. And you see it in the doc, like he has all these notes that he was writing that, like, a lot of them are incriminating, but he always kept all these notes about what was going on and how the money was moving and stuff. So we're seeing a lot of...
I think Kirk sued Puff.
He lost.
Yeah.
He lost. But so we're seeing a lot of the stories that we know about, but they're just more in-depth. They're like, they're giving more details and stuff. And, it makes Puff look like a sociopath. Like there's no,
he actually might be a sociopath. Like,
yeah. It's not, that's the thing. It's not kind of, it's not really like spun. They're just showing it.
I think people don't realize. So there's a couple things. And first of all, full disclosure, I haven't watched this yet, but this kind of, what I'm about to say kind of explains why I haven't watched it yet. I've heard a lot of people say this is well done and it's less sensational than a lot of the other Puff content,
is.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I may eventually watch it. The problem for me with the Puff content has been, and y'all might understand this, like when you were around enough to already kind of know the stories, the way, and like, again, Puff might be a sociopath. It's not as rare as people think for folks to be sociopaths, and especially not executives, and especially not male executives. But the way some people needed to build him up even further to be like a full-scale Gotham City villain instead of just like a cruel bully who only served his own self-interest, didn't care about other people, and had access to power and money, but like a regular, regular, cruel, you know, bully who didn't care about other people, had access to power and money, right? Like, the fact that could be anybody. It became him, again, because of his access to power and money, but it's not a rare story. And the way people all of a sudden, like, and this person mysteriously died, like, three days after they had a meeting. And this, that was the part that was bothering me, like.
Here's the thing, though. In the doc, I see what you're saying, but the doc is just facts.
Well, no, that's why I said I haven't seen this. This was why I was hesitant. I'm just saying this is why I'm hesitant to watch it. And now hearing people's feedback, I won't.
It's not putting that kind of spin on it. Like, you see very clearly in the doc that, like, this was not just anybody.
Right.
Anybody else who was given that shot, and they do it pretty chronologically too, but there's one story in particular that made me, it felt like a turning point where he calls, I forget which Burroughs guy is now that
Kirk,
you guys mentioned it.
Kirk. It's Kirk.
Calls him into the office, and the girl is giving him head, and then he just asks him to leave. Like, it was just a quick, called him in there just for that reason. And
I've heard that story.
There is no one else, no executive I know.
No executive you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not common for regular people
right.
to know people like this.
Right.
Like, I've had a boss who was a bitch, but, like, in no way was there a sexual tint to that.
Well, part of being, like, a mid... Part of being a mid to late 20s executive in that time, getting that kind of money and access, part of it kind of was, like, watch all the crazy shit that I could just get away with.
It was part and parcel. It was part and parcel for entertainment.
Yeah.
I would say that.
Like, how much ridiculous shit can we do as a course of business?
And this, you know, is, I mean? And this is no different than what we've seen when we peeled back the layers of Cosby or Weinstein.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Same, it's the same. And I haven't, just for clarification, allegedly, I have not watched the documentary. Right. I am not saying anything incriminating or suggesting mm-hmm. about anybody.
Nor are we saying it was okay. We're just saying it was a cultural... It was actually a kind of a cultural norm. We realize now how insane it was, but back then...
Yes. It was very... It was not uncommon in that particular space. Now, yes, I'm pretty sure nobody at Goldman Sachs was doing that shit. But
actually, I mean...
They might have been snorting coke out of a stripper's ass.
But they would do it outside... They wouldn't do it in an office. They weren't doing it in an office. Yeah, they would do it outside of office hours.
Yeah, I don't think it was on the trading floor, my nigga. Like, you know.
But in the entertainment business, in the music business, like... And I said this before, the thing about music and entertainment is that they have long been to spaces where they were supposed to subvert cultural norms. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. Right? Like, that was the thing. So, yes, we're talking about hip-hop, but it's the same ethos. Sex, drugs, girls, whatever.
I get that, but I think the layer of cruelty is what makes
it right, yes, so yes.
It was especially heinous. It's that mm-hmm. all this shit happened at City College. That was, you know, nobody's, like, it's hard to point the finger there.
Right.
But then putting your company in someone else's name so those families cannot recoup.
Yes. And see, but that's what I'm saying.
That's the especially heinous part.
He's a narcissist, likely a sociopath, definitely a bully, definitely an asshole, definitely cruel. Well, right? Is he Lex Luthor? No, but
those people do not.
You gotta watch the.
I understand, but Jeff,
he kind of is.
But Jeff, here's why I'm saying this. The reason I'm saying this is because I need people to understand that puffs happen. You know what I'm saying? They happen on smaller levels. They happen. It's not that he was just like. It's not like he so much had a villain origin story. People's minds. No, but hear what I'm saying.
Watch the
people's
doc.
Minds. Watch the doc. Jeff, listen to me.
Jeff, listen to me.
Just let me get my sentence out. Right. People's minds work like this. They just don't have the same situations and circumstances that allow them to play it out the way Puff did. People's minds work like this. Humans, they do. There are people out here who are this fucked up.
Nobody is disagreeing with that.
The doc, because again, and I think this part I was fascinated by, and I haven't seen a lot of people. This hasn't been a part that's been talked about to me enough. You have to watch Tim talking about how Puff was raised. And how Puff's mom was abusive and all this other thing. So he was kind of a sociopath as a child. He didn't like flip a switch. He was like this as a baby.
I don't think he flipped a switch. That's exactly what I don't think. That's what I'm saying. Like,
some people say, I've seen some people mention this. I've seen quite a few people mention this. Usually for the sake of arguments, they're usually smarter people. So they're mm-hmm. looking at this from a different lens. And what I mean by that is I think that there's a measure of, we don't like him, we never liked him, contingent, and we just want to sort of pile on, which is the easy, low-hanging fruit shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, I think the point that you're making is very valid, and that you and Ink are saying that this is not that. This is not an attempt at a pile on. And I think what Na is saying is that, like, to... Let me just say this, for the sake of argument, right? People notoriously and routinely take things out of their name and give it to family members.
That's business.
That is the first thing your lawyer is telling you.
Totally get right? that. Don't make it right, though.
No. What I'm saying is, it is a terrible thing, right? Like, this isn't about whether or not it's terrible. Right. This is, and I think that's to Na's point. to Nas' point is that we kind of take these things and make them a personal attribute to someone who was actually using and doing these things in the climate and in the context of the spaces that had come before him doing this shit.
And yes,
I can't say I wouldn't have made a few of the same business decisions if in that situation. I don't think any of us can say that. What I can say, though, is at some point, I would have done the right thing.
Yes, you would have.
Who were visually starving.
But you would have. Again, Puff is, I'm saying he's a bully. He's a cruel person. He's a possibly a sociopath. He's definitely a narcissist, right? Mm. So like, he's akin to a Trump. He's akin to, but just like in a different space. And again, akin to a Harvey Weinstein, who also terribly cruel, very mean, very violent human being, right? And also like very entitled, right? So like the thing about it is, and I've said, I don't think I've ever said it on this podcast, but I've said to many people, like, I don't believe, I may have said on the pod, I don't believe, and I've been saying this for years, I don't believe that people can sell their souls to the devil, but if I ever believe somebody could sell their soul to the devil, I would believe that Puff did. So like, because just because of the amount of shit that's happened around him and how long he went without, how long he went without being impacted. And I remember the first time, like, Puff used to never, ever be outside without sunglasses, ever, ever. And I remember the first time I saw him without his glasses, I was at Daddy's house, and he's in his own studio, and his eyes just kept darting around the room. And I was like, this is somebody who's not at peace, you know? So none of this is about me thinking Puff is not an actual horrible human being. I do think he's a horrible human being. But also, the industry has known he's a horrible human being. I guess it's just, I get it, that putting it all together and putting, because, like, there's been stories about all this bullshit Puff does, not quite the extent, it's the latter years with the pills and all the other stuff that have been stuff that people maybe didn't know about to the extent, but them early years, him in the office giving people head, him having folks jumped, him doing whatever, like, them stories are not
secret to y'all, you know, in the industry.
Right, to us, you're right.
I did not know. I was 9, 10
right
when the college shit happened, so I don't even have like,
but putting
nobody is calling y'all old.
I was only 3 years old.
Yeah, he's like, I was in the crib, I ain't know none of shit. But also,
I was not in New York in the 90s. I was not in the industry.
I understand. I
don't know anything about that other than, God, this is the nigga that
has parties. And I understand how putting everything in a straight line is very like gas clutch pearls, right? So I'm not knocking any of that for a lay person. And like I said, I didn't watch this documentary. I was just saying the reason I didn't watch it yet, the reason I have avoided Puff content is because, to the point of what you're saying, with people just laying out the story and laying out facts, folks would be like, well, you know, he probably has something to do with Andre. You know, he probably has something to do with Hev, you know, which is like traumatizing these people's actual families. You're not doing it for Kim. You're definitely not doing it for Misa, because people out there trying to now say that Justin is Wolf's son. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm not talking about this doc. I'm talking about the narratives that have been added.
I totally get you protecting your peace in that way.
I think that one of the reasons we're seeing so much more of that now is because that is a part of a business model. Mm-hmm. That is a part of content.
Exactly.
That's driven under the guise of journalism or driven under the guise of content. So, you know, you're just seeing people just saying, you know, ridiculous, outlandish, you know, shit, and doing so in a very harmful way, right? It's not even really, there's really no proof. There's no line to even be reasonable about it. So I didn't watch the doc because I definitely felt the same way. Like I had that feeling of like, I'm not interested in salaciousness for salaciousness sake. Like that doesn't really.
Question though, would you watch it if 50 was not attached?
I would say this. My personal opinion is that, okay, no, I would have felt the same way.
Okay. I still would have waited to get feedback. I'll be very honest. Most people I know who worked, I worked around Puff. I did work for Bad Boy. I did do a lot of Puff events, but I worked for people who are close to Puff. I want to clarify that. Most people I know who work very closely to Puff have not engaged in any of this content. Just because it's hard to see aspects of, even if they weren't personally involved in the stories being told, you're still involved in the story. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, this is, these are things that are really, and that's part of it for
it's
me too.
Like a silent cosign for some people, which I,
it's not even as a silent cosign. It's like you're watching people dissect shit. Like for me, folks kept checking on me like, oh my God, did you see any stuff? Are you okay? Are you? And I'm like, I'm fine, which sounded weird to say, right? Because then it becomes like people are coming to you digging. Like, well, what did you see? Well, what did you know? Well, what happened to you? And what? And I'm like, he was what we might now call verbally abusive, but so was Anna Wintour. So was everybody. Like, it, that wasn't unique. Like, that's how that was. Like, nigga, tighten up. You know what I mean? So it's just like, whatever. At the time, that's how execs across several industries were, not just Puff, but like, other than that, I personally didn't see shit, you know? So like, the music industry in general was a fucking haze, and I'm sure it was like very unhealthy and not really balanced, but I didn't, you know, I don't think I'm traumatized for it. And I'm not who I am right now without my Bad Boy experience. So it is kind of hard sometimes to see certain things dissected and you were there or you were around and you're like, that's not how that went. You know what I mean? But you can't really say that without sounding like an apologist.
With the way it's laid out, there's none of that because it just is. There's nobody spinning. There's not even, there's definitely some talking head stuff, but like it's not spinning. It's just kind of laying the story out of his arc, of his
existence, how he got to that point.
How he got to that point, exactly.
I will say, and sort of back to what you were saying, Inca, about would I watch it if it was 50? I would not, and that's for two reasons, right? My feeling about the salaciousness is that there's something about this that just did not feel right. And I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And this is not to say that the integrity of the filmmakers were in question. It was just sort of the timing of it just felt it felt a bit of a dog pile, if that makes sense. And I was kind of like, and again, I'm speaking from my perspective, which is I've always watched documentaries in the space of, Will I walk away from this documentary knowing something that I don't already know, right?
You
can watch 8 or 9 fucking documentaries on Tupac being killed, and you really don't walk away with any more new
information. And I don't watch those either, for the record.
Right? Walk away with new information on Tupac after watching this.
You're gonna see some stuff you didn't know in this one.
I mean,
I'm telling you, you will.
The thing is we were around in both capacities, around in the barbershops where niggas was really talking and around where niggas weren't really talking, but outside. So again, to me, would it be something that's going to make me go, oh my God, a light just went off. And I'm be like, nigga, we heard that in 98. Nigga told me that, so.
I think that's kind of my thing. Cause my friends are tagging me into group chats and like, I need not to chime in. And I was like, I'm not watch. Like, it's kind of the same thing. So I'll watch eventually. Cause I said, if it's done in kind of a journalistic style, like just story laid out, kind of like Surviving R. Kelly or something like that. I said, I will eventually watch. But
it's better than Surviving R. Kelly because they have so much of like footage,
right?
Of Puff.
I want to tap into that a little bit because what I'm finding here, what I've heard allegedly as to how this footage got into their hands, was basically an unpaid bill.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. like a storage unit or something.
No, like. No, he didn't pay the people who were capturing the footage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Leading up to his like arrest, they have from like the day before.
If that is accurate, that mm-hmm. is the most 1990s ass mm-hmm. business shit I have ever heard in my fucking life. That is
the thread that sews every single story together is some kind of non-payment, though.
From
Howard University to the jail he's in now.
Because he's a terrible business person. He's always shit on everybody.
It's just like Trump. Think, like,
again, like Trump.
Pay
yeah.
for the catering. Why would we do that?
I think what they've done here is, you know, like you said, they made a great documentary. I'm also, as a person who watches documentaries, I tend to lean toward docs that sort of let things breathe a little bit. Right. And it is so fresh still with him literally just being sentenced to have the doc on the heels of that. It just feels a bit overkill for the from the personal viewing perspective is my point. Not that they, you know, this is obviously taking place in this particular way. And listen, we can ignore the 50 aspect of it all if we want to. And
but it matters to
I'm
me.
I'm a big proponent of just I don't say anything here that I couldn't stand on, right. But there's an elephant in the room with that, and whether or not that elephant is addressed doesn't mean that dude was right in any of the shit that he did, right? So we're not talking about the right or wrong here, mm-hmm. but to act as though that doesn't have a little bit of weight here is like a little bit disingenuous, right? I don't think this documentary moves with the speed that it moves without his name attached.
Well, yes, and yes, but not. I know what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that the reason we have the physics for the unpaid bill, but also because Puff genuinely thought he was going to get off.
That's yes.
what he's filming. Another clip. So I saw a small clip. I don't mean to cut you off. I saw a small clip, and I was like, "My nigga, what are you?
Why are you recording this?"
It
was that funny. Was my whole shit.
What I wanted to know, like, nigga, are you in a separate room that they are not telling you? Are you in the same room? Are you in the same vicinity?
Are you aware that the cameras are recording?
Yeah. Do you know we can see you?
Yeah. Like,
right. It was just the fact that he genuinely thought that he was going to walk. Mm-hmm. I think is a true testament to the ability for him to sort of get by things unscathed and walk away from things. It's almost like the video where the shit is blowing up in the background.
Everything's fine.
You know what I'm saying? Right. And that's kind of what it feels like. And you know what? It's hard to argue with that guy when he in fact walks away unscathed.
So Justin Tinsley, who wrote the most recent Biggie biography, texted me because when he interviewed me for the Biggie biography, I was talking to him off record about how almost literally a reckoning ever caught up to Puff for all the shit that other people had to take the heat for. So like Hef taking the heat for City College, Sean and Wolf going down for Club New York. You know, just every time something's happened to people around him, and somehow he's like, even down to the artists who had like breakdowns, and you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't even know if they got like, there's a child artist who was on Bad Boy called Jerome, and Jerome had a breakdown. He had a breakdown on set and started running around talking about how he was seeing the devil, like just shit like that, right? So, but these things would happen around him, but seemingly not touch him, but then he loses Kim, he loses Dre, you know, and when he loses Dre, he becomes untethered. But I was just like, I think Dre was still alive at the time we had this conversation, but I was like, if it ever finally catches up with Puff, it's going to be so big and so dark. And so he was texting me to just be like, I always go back to that conversation that we had. And because I'm sure he never thought it was going to happen. I don't know if I thought it was ever going to happen, right? But I don't think
it's fully happened.
I don't think he's realized it, but like Puff's lost everything. He's lost everything. I don't think he's yet really accepted it. He was already over leveraged on his publishing. He was already over leveraged on his overhead. I think he had like 3 mortgages on the house. He's not liquid anymore because he's been paying attorney's fees with no income coming in for like 2 years now. Nobody's gonna pay him. And most of his money for the past couple of years has been brand deals. Nobody's paying him for brand deals anymore. You know what I mean? Like his name was his
The most important thing was social currency.
He's lost that.
To which he is not going to be getting an invite to what's the new white boy white party?
The Mike Ovitz.
Oh, Michael Ovitz, right?
Oh, Mike, whatever his name is. But he already wasn't before the charges came. That's when I knew. When I knew it was over. I was like, you're not even getting an invite to the white party that you made famous.
And that was probably because you're just not hot right now.
Right.
You are a social pariah. And I think that he is at the, you know.
But literally everybody and their mama would be at that party.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be something that's going to change. And listen, man, I don't know what happens. We've seen these sorts of, listen, we thought Bill Cosby was going to do all his time. He ended up, you know,
right,
on a technicality. I don't know. He obviously has people that are going to be in his corner, far be it from me. But he don't need another cheerleader from Sean Young. Mm-hmm. So I'm not here to do none of that.
And he doesn't have, like, this is another argument that was happening, at least online a lot, is like, Puff got plenty of money. I'm like, no, he don't. He does not have, I promise you, he does not have plenty of money.
And I don't know.
If nothing else, he's definitely cash poor. My guess is that his assets are over-leveraged as well.
People in general have very little concept of what money at that scale,
like,
mm-hmm. First of all, they think you walk into a bank and there's like, just millions of dollars.
Yeah, people, I'm sure he has offshore accounts and stuff. And
they think a nigga could walk in the Bank of America,
right,
and be like, yo, let me just see my 10 million right now. Like,
because that's what I would do. I want to look at my money.
Let me just see it.
Where is it?
It don't really work like that. There's value, there's valuation.
I will find out one day.
Companies. And listen, he's never, so yes, I think it is fairly safe to say he is never going to be down with a 2-in-1 condo.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen. Okay.
But your man had a crazy overhead.
But you know what's interesting though, Sean, and I haven't seen anybody talk about this. I mean, because the doc, like Inga said, you have to after you finish, you have to process it because it's so much information. When I was watching, I said I'm gonna have to watch this again because it's so much. But even as little things that like the people probably didn't notice, like he was staying at the hotel he was staying at in New York. It was a regular hotel. He wasn't like a palace. He was like a regular hotel. His lifestyle had completely downgraded, but I think people were really paying attention to, like, now he ain't really, like, years ago, he would have been like at the Ritz-Carlton or something like that. Nah, he was at
Florida Plaza.
Does that mean he doesn't have that? Like, does that also mean, because Puff used to have a spot in New York, spot in Jersey, spot in LA, spot in New York. I think he actually got rid of everything except LA and Miami.
Yeah, he ain't got no
because spot. He put Janice's house up for collateral when he was trying to make bail. He couldn't even put one of his own houses up because they're so severely mortgaged. So that's what I'm saying. Like he's over leveraged. He's been over leveraged.
Yeah.
It's really
well done though. Like it's like little subtle things. Like I think he's in New York. He's like, yo, I can't believe they knocked the Bad Boy building down. Showing the crumbling of his empire,
right,
and he's not really realizing that his empire is crumbling this whole time. There's all these little kind of subtle things that are happening throughout the doc. It's like, Doc, rather, it's like, bro, it's over. It's falling apart. It's over. And he's still just like, nah, I'm going to get off.
It's very much like an athlete. It's very, very difficult to tell the motherfucker he ain't Superman no more.
Yeah,
because this is how he's always gotten his, through sheer will, that's how he's always.
I just want to be clear about something too. Like nobody fucking handed Bad Boy over to him as an heir, right? Like there was
he built it,
right? Like he built. And while we can, you know, if you want to argue his tactics, I'm not interested in arguing his tactics. That was a real fucking
game down.
It was real. It really shifted culture.
Yeah.
It really shifted business.
Mm-hmm.
And how, because nobody wanted to miss out on the next Bad Boy. That's how impactful it was.
Yeah.
So, there's a part in there when he first did the Ciroc deal.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about, you know, what they offered and stuff. And I forget who he's talking to. Was it Kirk? It was one of them. And he, or maybe Tim. And he was like, yo, watch this. Watch what I do. And they show like how he was like started to do the market and building it up and the commercials and having it every, like he really it
That
was a
set
genius.
the precedent. Like, hip hop artists were not getting liquor deals where it felt like they owned it at that point. And the deal that they made with him wasn't like an outright, we want you to be the brand ambassador. It was like, no, if you can sell a million of these by the end of the year, we'll give you this amount of money. And then going forward, you
And
can,
he
you
did.
know, be the director, blah, blah, blah.
And
And he
also
did it in way less time,
and in
which.
terms of, it'll probably be some time before we can have, I've been talking about this to somebody because I'm trying to develop a class on New Jack Swing, and it's like, how do I include Puff? Because I can't not include Puff. But it's like, when we talk, there is the way he did business and who he was as a person, and then there's what impact he had, right? And those two things, like, they exist, you know, both of them exist at the same time, because you can't deny his impact on music. You can't deny his impact on culture. Even
Absolutely.
like party energy, as much as these white people are paying him dust now, that nigga was the king of parties for like the entire late
Me.
90s into the early 2000s. The
The
king, like
king, my nigga.
the king of party energy, the king of set and vibes, the king of making shit sexy, the king of like, you gotta come in here and you gotta look like this,
You gotta
and the
do
mix has to
that,
be
right? I'm
like
gonna tell you one
this.
thing. I'm gonna say another thing. Niggas was not in the Hamptons like that.
Mm-mm.
Nope. Was
They
not in
wasn't.
the Hamptons like that.
Even
Nope.
I can
Nope.
speak for DC, and when
Right.
Dream opened, because
Yeah.
that is a club that Diddy owned, at least part of it,
Part of it, yep.
changed DC nightlife.
Yeah,
Like,
like
period.
like things he touched, people wanted to be part of because they knew he had his finger on the pulse of what was going to be hot, keeping shit sexy, all this other stuff. And I'm like, the depravity was a different level. Like, there was a space where, because like the New Yorker was trying to do oral history at a white party, and I think they scrapped the story because his sentencing happened or something, or not his sentencing, his verdict came. But I was explaining to them, like, I don't know what happened in these later freak off parties, but like the white parties at their prime, they were family. Kids was there, mamas was there, like
I'm
People
glad
Mag
you made
like InStyle magazine and People magazine are covering, like, it was.
the last thing I'll say on this is that when people operate in those types of spaces, whether it's him, whether it's shit, your fucking drug dealing cousin, whomever,
Right.
not everybody is privy to everything.
Right.
And this idea
It's
that
layers.
everybody, yeah, there's layers. There's certain shit that I might tell this cousin that I'm never gonna let this cousin know.
Right.
And that's how that shit operates, right? Like you might got a cousin that is ready to literally ride in the fucking shotgun seat, right?
Yeah.
And you got other cousins that you ain't never gonna tell them you doing nothing.
Right.
And it's the same thing with anybody else, right? You're moving in spaces, you do, and I think that's part and parcel to 50s anger. I mean, I think that we know what the other issue is, but I think the issue that he really sort of harps on was the let me take you shopping thing.
He talks about it
And I
all the time.
mean, and I mean, we all sort of understand why a guy from where he's from and from that culture, from that street culture, why you would take it that way. Why you would take it in the way of like, is this nigga trying to play with me? You think I'm a bitch, right? Like that sort of. And I think that just kind of like seeing all of this stuff sort of morph, man, it's just been really, really interesting. I'm probably gonna watch this. It's not
I'll watch it
on
eventually, but I gotta wait for the public discourse on it.
it's not on my immediate to do. And you know, but I'll kind of get around to it. But none of that is going, you know, move the needle for me personally on what I feel and what I think happened in a lot of these situations.
All
I
right.
just want
Hey,
to
Nate, you want to
mention
go ahead.
Mark Curry and how much he hates that nigga and
I
how
hate
well that translated
it.
through the
Mark really
letter.
does hate him.
But
I was like,
you know what was
holy
interesting to
shit.
me in watching the other Mark interviews, he just came off as, in my opinion, very just bitter. In this interview, he was hurt. He wasn't bitter. He cried at the end. He was hurt, like by what he had been through. And so it made me look at Mark differently.
I'm
Because
not
before,
saying you're wrong because I haven't seen it, but those two things can be They can be. Yeah. They're not
mutual. They can coexist.
They're not mutual. Yes.
Yeah.
Coexist. Yeah, but I guess it made Mark this doc interview made Mark more human to me.
Gotcha.
Definitely more sympathetic. Because before I was like, who are you and why are you exactly. this? Like,
but then after this, it was like, oh, okay. But so, April, have you kept up with, have you looked at this Netflix Warner Brothers thing? Being a resident businessman.
I got CNBC on right now in the background watching this.
Yeah. So Netflix is just becoming a behemoth. Like, they just got their fingers and everything in it.
$2. They're not going to have
Need that content pipeline. Like, they can't keep up with the demand.
Yesterday's price is not going to be today's price.
Well, you can do without it.
Apparently, one of the guys, one of the talking heads pointed, made a very good point. I think it's something like they pay, if the deal falls flat at some point or they don't reach these benchmarks, it's something like a $5.6 billion payout after like 2 years or 3 years or something like that, that they Netflix would have to pay Warner Brothers to basically revert the rights back. And the guy was basically pointing out, like, even if this deal doesn't necessarily happen or go through properly, the five point something billion dollars it would cost them was just worth the wait. It was worth it to get them off market.
Yeah, yeah.
So Paramount can't buy them or another.
Exactly.
Right. So there. So when people see these deals, like, there are so many triggers and sort of metrics and measures and things that you have to sort of meet. And listen, we don't know. I'm not sure if this go. I don't know if this is going to be viewed as a monopoly or.
I was wondering about that.
Go through. Yeah. I mean, listen. I will say this: at some point, there has to be a change in the laws on who can buy what, because
was the other problem. It was going to be a monopoly if the other people bought Paramount.
Exactly, right? So we've got to figure out, you know, basically the world is like 10 companies. It's like fucking 10
it really
companies
is.
You're getting everything
Please
from.
Know that
literally
is not going to happen under this administration. You're not getting any kind of corporate change.
I think that the moment that we start to see a lot of these stocks take hits, that it's impacting the personal wealth of the people that are in those seats, I think it'll start to register.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, listen, you know, it is what it is. Netflix, you know, they've done decent with their original programming. I don't think they've done anything strong that's been like, hey, must see TV. You know, I think they're a solid streamer. People go to them. They've definitely turned the corner with the comedy stuff. I mean, that's really your go-to place if you're
and documentaries.
Documentaries
are big.
Well, and listen, they can definitely, you know, offer you some good licensing deals. If you did a great indie project, you can go to them and you know, do a decent term.
Mm-hmm. And in that, it was interesting though, politically, and I got to read deeper into it because, you know, the Saudis were involved in the Paramounts when Paramount was going to be part of Netflix, but now they're not because it's not Paramount. It's not the Saudis, so I don't know. I got to dig deep into like who the players are now. But I'm not.
Saudis putting their paws on everything.
Everything, because they got, yeah. And I started noticing on Netflix all this HBO Max content popping up. I was like, why is HBO Max shows on Netflix? And I was like, oh, that was a power move. Yeah, so it's I want to see how that lays out. I want to talk about, even I didn't go. Inka, did either of you go to the Brandy Monica show?
No.
I didn't make it.
Bro went.
But my friends who went had an amazing time, and I found it interesting. Apparently, it sparked a little bit of a debate online as to whether Brandy. Because I will say this: when I saw the tour lineup, I was like, "Why they got the young girls? Why they got the millennial artists opening, not some Xers?" And apparently, it did spark a debate as to whether Brandy and Monica are millennial X or Xer X, because they debuted as teenagers, but they weren't marketed as child X. You know what I mean?
It was a kiddie bop.
Yeah, so like Aaliyah, Brandy, Monica, Usher all came. No, Monica was last. Aaliyah, Usher, Brandy, Monica all came out within about a year and 2 months of each other, between 94 and 95. And they were all the same, around the same age, but none of them, they were all like right in the same lineup with the adult act. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm in college and we're listening to all of them, but then I definitely understand how it was millennials who were like watching them on TV, actually watching Moesha, because I was not watching Moesha, actually watching Moesha, like actually like all of that. Because by the time The Boy's Mom comes out, I'm grown, you know, so it's like whatever. But so they do kind of walk, they're like exennial, I guess they walk that line. But yeah. One of the reasons I didn't want to go to the concert was because I was like, I don't need to see Money Long. I don't, you know what I mean? It was like, I don't necessarily need to see Kelly.
It's Maya now.
I don't necessarily need to see Kelly, you know, but I, yeah, but people I know who went, who are you mostly millennials, it had a great time.
Yeah, it's almost like a 106 and Parkish kind of, like it brings.
And I am not a 106 and Park demo. Yeah,
put all the energy back.
This Scream tour for sensible people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I did want to go. It just didn't line up with when they were here, which sucks. Yeah. But
it seems to have been a success. I mean,
it looked like a Wang Dang Doodle.
They had a great time.
A Wang Dang Doodle.
I will say though, I finally saw Kay Tronada live the other night.
Oh, you did?
How was it? Spiritual experience. I could not believe that a DJ was doing this to the crowd. Like, it was.
He's on level. He was on CBS Sunday Morning and everything. And he's kind of going to that next level as an artist. You know, he's out. So you've heard the latest album.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
Like, just a couple of. There was a couple of moments in there where I was like, oh my God, like Jesus is probably here enjoying this party.
Of Monica and Brandy, and I'm totally blanking. Ugh, it'll come back to me. Dang, it was a good thing too.
Did people wear suits? Did y'all see the looks for the concert?
For Brandy Monica?
Yeah.
No.
I saw some posts. Okay, can you explain this to me, Inca? Can you explain Brandy's comments on Beyonce's post where she was like, you literally got my outfit on? Did you see this the other day?
Brandy gets on my nerves, so like as a person, not really, you know, the artist side. So I don't really tap into anything.
So I
saw this shit about Ray J being mad that like Beyonce didn't like speak to him or didn't come to Brandy's like dressing room or some shit.
Oh God.
I think they just wanted to say hey to Kelly and ran into Monica and Patti LaBelle
But also like why would they, Ray? But
would anybody want to be near Ray J?
Like for what reason? But also like what I saw was, I want to say it was Tuesday, and on days I have class, I'm not really online, so I never got a chance to dig into it. But something like Beyonce had posted some picture, because I kept seeing people be like, I'm just going to say she was hacked. And I was like, what's the context? And I still got to dig into it. But somebody posted a screenshot. Beyonce had posted a picture. She had on some kind of like a tuxedo type bodysuit and a trench coat or something with tights and sunglasses. And Brandy had commented, and once it was like, no, but you're literally wearing my outfit. That's literally my outfit that you have on. There was another comment like, I dare you to come back and take a picture with me. It'll go viral. Both of these are from Brandy. And I was like, what's that about? But I'll go find out. I thought you would know, but I'll go find out.
I know what it was.
What was it?
That's nuts.
So it was interesting to me. So
yeah, y'all know I think Brandy a little touched, but go ahead.
Because of this concert and, you know, everybody, you know, coming out having a good time, reliving their teenage years, I saw some comments online with women saying it's very it's sad that, like, in that era, you said you had Aaliyah, you had, you know, Monica, you had Brandy, and some others, even some older artists like the Whitneys and whatnot, that young girls could look up to, even on the acting side. And now the young girls today have baddies. And you see it in their behavior. It was teachers and stuff saying, like, I see why I'm having a lot of issues with these young girls, because they don't have any a lot of positive role models to look up to. It's all baddies, Real Housewives, the kind of like fast life lifestyle. Whereas then they had kind of more solid lifestyles to look up to, and it reflected in the way the young girls are acting. But between then and now. What do y'all think about that?
I think I've been talking about that for a while. Go ahead.
I was going to say, people been saying that shit about every generation. Every generation is, they ain't...
That Norwegian Franklin.
Yeah, ain't no this, ain't no that. Nigga, for us, it was, there ain't no Martin Luther Kings. That's why these boys got it. Like, all right, nigga, whatever, nigga.
I will say...
Bull nigga talk.
There's a little bit I agree with. There was a period where after the writer's strike in like 08, 09... we lost most of our black sitcoms, and what they were replaced with was black reality TV. Mm-hmm. So that plus the advent of, plus the increase of social media is what kind of made, like, all of a sudden you needed to read everybody. Everything was, I'm going to pop off, I'm going to clap back, I'm going to be sassy, I'm going to catch an attitude. Like, things became very extra, right? And I think it was those two things combined together, because part of what we're also seeing with the kids is like this, it's online speak and not actually having like real, I don't know, interpersonal, like kids don't have soft skills anymore. They don't.
I have to cut you off, but I think that also falls in line with the timeline of social media.
That's what I said. It's both. It's both things. It's the rise of social media. Cause like I said, a lot of what we're seeing is like, it's behavior picked up from the internet without context.
I want to go viral and that sort of shit. Mm-hmm. And listen, people will adapt and all of those sorts of things. Like, listen, at the end of the day, okay, motherfuckers need to get back to sitting at the kitchen table and doing If Johnny Got Three Apples, okay? Because they ain't doing If Johnny Got Three Apples no more.
Well, they're not, but they're also not having conversations about, like, how do we process this thing in a healthy way? How do you handle conflict in a healthy way? Not a clap back. I had to have a conversation with one of my students. I had to have a I'm not one of your little friends conversation with one of my students recently because they felt a way about the way I addressed something with them. And I was like, this, we're not going to have the conversation like this. You know, so I'm sorry, Inka, you wanted to say something.
I did. I think a couple things are at play here. When I was growing up, when I was in that, like, I don't know, 10 to 14 kind of period, we had stuff like Clarissa Explains It All and, you know, Nick Jr. Teen and just Nickelodeon in general, Salute Your Shorts and like those cool kind of kid shows. And then the generation after me, you had like Mary-Kate and Ashley and all of their millions of videotapes and Justice and like Places to Shop and a specific look that's between, you know, for those girls. As even Ivy, as she's getting like out of that super kid, like, you know, crossing the aisle from like toddler clothes into like little girl clothes, none of them are functional.
Yeah.
There are no characters on the clothes that are not just a random unicorn. There is no like place to put this fandom. There's not a tween role model or even, I mean, shit, a couple years ago they had Kiki Palmer, Coco Jones had a show, what's the child's name, Zendaya. All those kids had these like really, you know, interactive kind of personas on television, Miley Cyrus even. And girls specifically now don't have that shit. And so it's hard to say, or to even like have you know how you could like pick the thing you, the style you wanted to kind of emulate from the media that you're
right,
you know, inundated with. There is none of that that isn't like super grown, right, or a baby.
And unfortunately, that's not even just a black thing. I think that's happening in white media too. Because I don't like, is there even still like Disney programming like that? That's not like,
it's little kid grown- largely animated or not game show, but like weird kid reality kind of things, or kids, you know, unboxings and.
Because that's another thing. There's that's the other problem. There's kidfluencers like the 12-year-old Jason's daughter. She wants to watch YouTube all day, it's these things where it's like people baking cakes or something, but somebody's doing like this weird story behind it. And I told her, I don't want to do that because you're not listening to the story, but I'm listening to the story, and the stories they're not always appropriate for what the content is. Mm-hmm. And this is how, like, not to be the conspiracy person, but this is how the stuff like seeps into your brain.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
Also, to Sean's point, it's also literacy, because they, you know, corporations and people who were making the movies were looking at, okay, kids are reading The Babysitter's Club, we should probably make a show on this. Kids are reading Goosebumps, let's make a show on this. Kids ain't reading.
Yeah, so there is more YA, like, see, there's more, like, the high school coming of age stuff has come back, but you're right, there's not kind of like that in-between space. Like, Janae was going back, watching old Zendaya, the old Disney stuff, the Zendaya stuff, and even, like, Sam and Cat, and, like, all of that type of stuff, and now she's on a Blackish kick, which I'm fine with, because it is a representation of
a family show.
Yeah, but, like, to your point, not only was there not that, but there weren't, for people a little bit younger than you even, Inca, there were not, like, when I was in high school, there were black high schools on TV. When I got to college, there were black college students on TV. Or right before I went to college, there were black college students on TV. So I was like, this comes next. And then I got to college and there was Living Single and Martin. And I was like, that comes next. Right. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, then there was Girlfriend.
TV grew
I was
up
like,
with
that
you.
Comes next.
And now it has regressed in such
it was showing me models of what life could look like. And we were the first. And we were the first generation of black people to even have that. Right. You know what I mean? Like, in Living Color, you never saw, like, black people at college. You know, I mean, not in Living Color, Different World. So it's like, but now we had lost that. So instead, again, people are watching Growing Up, what is it, Growing Up Hollywood or whatever, like, all those different things.
I want to just say, too, because, so there is a bit of a personal aspect to my feeling about this, particularly
of
where
course.
TV, right? Like, there's obviously the elephant in the room.
Not saying it's evil. I'm just saying we didn't have a balance.
Yes, and I just want to say that a part of my reaction is based on the fact that I just think that so often we take that hour a week of television and sort of use that as the blanket reasoning for why air quote society is going downhill when there are a multitude of things that are at play. And I really do think that yes, it is hard, right? And every generation has to adapt, right? Every generation adapts to music, every generation adapts to go play some of that shit we was listening to in 1988.
No, you're right. It's like, and we can't. I'm not passing a moral judgment.
Fuck you in the ass.
Yeah,
that's the thing, though.
I'm definitely not passing a moral judgment.
As a kid who was raised in front of the television, I think raising kids now, we probably caught it a little too late.
Yeah.
Kind of throwing them in front of the TV like we were is not the same.
It's not
buying Wonder Bread in 1958 is not the same as Wonder Bread today. You can't eat that shit.
I don't disagree with that, but I'm also saying that there is a wider range of choices for you to consume content now,
and it's a lot more difficult to control.
It's a lot more.
That's the problem.
It's a lot more difficult to navigate, but you have a lot more options. So I'm saying
there are more options, but I think, to me, it's about a kind of a bunch of factors coming together to create a cycle. So again, it's the loss of let's say family program. It's a loss of family programming at a certain point, combined with dropping literacy rates and you know, people being taught to like think critically, a drop in media literacy, combined with the rise of social media and the flattening of things, and people frankly having access to content and conversations that they really shouldn't.
We are cooked.
Like, because even with me, I have to check myself sometimes, because I have to be like, in real life, I wouldn't be seeing this dumbass conversation because it's not for me, and they're 20 years younger than me, and why do I give a fuck? But on the flip side, in real life, those 20-year-olds don't need to be in the grown folks conversation. Right. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of like that back and forth. All of those things happening at the same time kind of gets us to where we are.
It's also wild that we are the adults. Like, I'm still not over it.
Yeah, but that's a whole nother conversation.
That's another conversation.
I was actually going to tap in there in a second. But you know, the real problem is once they cancel T-Sub.
They be on that phone.
Once they cancel T-Sub and everybody went downhill.
But I think it's important that we acknowledge, like, yo, fucking college application rates are still, you know, high. They're
high.
Different world on, right? So I'm just saying that not every, I think we also tend to, and I don't want to say take a loud minority, but we tend to take these things that are sort of right in front of us and make them the only, like the
biggest, only thing, yeah.
the biggest issue. And yeah, I do think that there are tons of kids, like, I, you know, there are tons of kids that are actually doing well in school. They're actually
very well
going to college.
They're super smart. They ain't got no common sense, but they're super smart.
And yes, we do.
They ain't gonna survive in the wild for longer than 12 hours. But
and the last thing definitely dying within 35 minutes of an attack. Done. Y'all are out of here.
Shit, so am I.
The last thing I'll say is that a lot of that clap back and that behavior, I think is way more. There's an easier line to draw to parents.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Than to outside influences.
Oh yeah.
And I think that we miss the boat when we continually make the outside influence, whether it's television,
right,
internet, friends, whomever, because when I see a certain type of behavior,
yeah,
guess what? When I go into that person's house, like, that behavior is not far away. Like,
yeah, right.
I don't see why this kid acts
like
that. But I see
there
don't
be no consequences in the house.
True. But I see it in terms, Sean, I hear you and I agree with you, and I also, though, see in terms of as we were getting generations who were more and more socialized on social media. I mean, socialized on the internet instead of, like, in real life and having to actually navigate social frameworks in person. And we're instead developing personas online. And stan communities is also part of this, the nastiness of it all. So it's not so much that I'm saying kids watch TV and adapt to this. I'm saying there were certain things that came into our lexicon that started becoming part of, you know, so again, it's sick to me, it's cyclical, right? Like, what comes into pop culture, what comes into the lexicon, what comes into people's habits, and some people saying them jokingly and other people adopting them seriously. Like, and so that's kind of the spectrum I'm looking at. And listen, I'm not making it so much a moral judgment because my generation had the highest teen pregnancy rates. We was listening to fucking NWA. I listened to Niggas for Life a few months ago driving. I used to listen to Niggas for Life every day. Every single day. Me and my friends listened to that album driving around after school. When I say every day, every day. I was horrified listening to that fucking album. Horrified. I was like, oh my God. Because I had forgotten how bad some of it was. And I was like, yo, we was really every day rapping along, bopping.
Games.
Craziness. I was like, Ren needs to go to fucking jail. Like, you know, it was just like, I don't. Mm-hmm. Wild, right? But again, every day at 16 years old. You know, so it's just like, so I'm not necessarily making a moral judgment so much, but you're right. There was a certain, like, awareness in my parents' house of like, okay, we know you listen to this foolishness, but you know it's foolishness, right? You know, like that type of thing.
Not real life.
Yeah, so there was like a balance. And also just a balance of like other options, because there are more options than other, but the algorithm is just going to give you what you watch.
Mm-hmm.
What
you
listen to. Did y'all watch Eddie?
Yeah, I still need to watch Eddie. I know it's so good. I still need to watch.
Loved it.
I enjoyed that a lot.
Love the Eddie doc. Eddie,
they kept it light.
Eddie is, first of all, just black men of a certain age holding court is like no other.
Favorite genre.
Nobody fucking holds court like Eddie. And his memory is crazy because he doesn't just remember the specificity in which he remembers the fucking date, what he was wearing. It's phenomenal. And you realize one of the things that we often forget, and I say this about LL as well, that they were fucking kids.
How young they were, yeah. Eddie had SNL on his back. He was like 22.
Eddie was in the clubs at like 16. Like the shit that he, you know, so it's fast. Like his dad had to like fucking drive him to kick. Like that's how young he was. And so I think that, you know, because obviously we're, you know, he's older than us, right? So we see him as an adult, but like to really put in perspective, like he's doing Beverly Hills Cop. I mean, he's a full-fledged movie star.
Right.
Yeah. 23, 24.
Yeah, like it's.
Yeah, because I think Coming to America, but he was 24. 24 is stuck in my head somewhere. That might have been Coming
to America. Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop, so he was like 20.
Yeah.
And then Trading Places, I think he was like 21.
And you know why else, though, we think of him as an adult? Is because they look grown as fuck.
For me, it was the cousin.
Yeah.
Them niggas look old as fuck.
Yeah, I felt like the way he cussed was like
his tone.
The mustaches, all of that. They just felt older.
Yeah, it was really well done. And obviously, he talked a lot about, you know, his brother and growing up in Brooklyn before they moved out to the island. And that's the first time I've heard him talk about his biological father in relationship with his mother. He's always talked about his stepfather, who, you know, basically became his father because he came in his life so young. But I never had heard Eddie talk about his biological father.
When he talked about his stepdad, what I didn't realize was the boxing. And it really, again, that line from parents, like that level of discipline,
mm-hmm.
right? Getting up every day, going to work, like them old black men, you got your ass up and you went to work. Even if they drank a fifth, got up and went to work. You know what I'm saying? And then it dawned on me, oh shit, that's him jumping rope for real in the fucking Nutty Professor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh shit, Eddie can read.
Yeah, because his father trained them as
exactly
kind of fighting stuff. Yeah.
I love the fact that he acknowledges that he has some, you know, career missteps with the movies, right? And you kind of, you know, you got a couple fumbles, right? You got a 40-year career and you ain't got no fumbles. That's not realistic, right? But, like, the gems that he did, when you really think about it, like, those movies have aged so well, whether it's Coming to America, whether it's fucking Boomerang, man. Like,
Boomerang is one of the best ensemble comedies of all time, period.
My favorite movie.
Yo, I
ever.
Stress
hands down.
Fucking Marcus Graham.
Yeah.
E 16, nigga, I'm in like old men shot you.
Nigga, trying to get it right. Coats,
trying to give me one of the Marcus Graham coats. Like, it was just so fly.
Yeah.
So fly. And even the haircut, nobody else could pull that
haircut,
off.
All that shit. So I thought it was really, really good. He reminds you again that he's still fucking Eddie Murphy toward the end when he pulls the dolls out.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that he fucking makes fun of Bill Cosby. I love it.
You know, no, the clip when I saw it, so I have seen the clip of him with the Cosby, Cosby and Pryor dummies, and that shit. I watched it so many times, and I laughed out loud.
He said that was going to be. He said if he would have went out to do stand up, that was going to be part of the act.
I actually really need that to be part of the act.
Really would love to see that.
I just want a show that's just.
He said he can't work out.
That's what I was gonna say. So the doc was interesting for me to see come because you know Eddie did this this deal with Netflix a few years ago that was supposed to be however many pieces of content, movies, whatever. And I think when they did the deal, it was in anticipation that he was going to work out and put together a special.
Yeah, he talked about it.
He told Jerry Seinfeld, I think we talked about riding in cars with comedians, riding cars, getting coffee, whatever it is, which brilliant, fucking brilliant.
Love that show. Still watching all the time.
But I think he told Jerry then that he had to go work out. So I've been waiting, like.
He said he was in the process of trying to figure it out, and then a pandemic hit.
Right, I didn't know that.
Pandemic hit, he just, and this documentary was supposed to be he said they were going
to
do
supposed it. Supposed to be the special?
Leading up to him going on to do a special. But he just did the special and never worked out because he said he can't really work out because he can't, everybody's going to come to everything he does. And if it's not quite funny, then everybody's going to have all these comments.
Point to like sneak into some random ass,
you know, with social media,
rooms.
Right. We can't kind of be sneaky like he used to be.
I agree with that. And I think that that's a fair assessment. I think that that's a real assessment. Eddie also said, I don't want to do shit.
Working out is a year. It's a year on the road of putting together material.
I want to read my paper and eat my prunes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Literally.
And guess what? I've worked for 40 years. In any other capacity, he'd be putting in his fucking papers, nigga. If he was in transit, he'd be putting his papers in.
But also, down in Delaware. I feel like he loves it. My dad worked for 40 years, put his papers in, got another job 4 months later.
But I think he loves doing it on his terms, right? Like, I don't want to get up and do this shit every day, but I'll show up occasionally and bullshit.
You have to, but it's like, also, the massive house and all that. He's like, I'm good at home. I'm chilling.
One of the things that they said that has been said about Eddie is that Eddie does not, he almost to a point where he makes it a point to not own the room.
Right.
He does not like to own the room. He does not like to be the center of attention. Mm-hmm. So, like, motherfuckers, they was showing, oh, I ran into Eddie at a coffee shop and shit. Like, just does regular shit.
Yeah.
Do regular shit. And I, listen, his kids are, most of his kids are grown. I think he has a couple of, like, smaller.
With the current wife.
Yeah,
but, like, you know, I mean, that big ass house, I mean, it's going to be quiet regardless. That shit.
Nigga, the roof opened up. I was like, what are we doing? What kind of money is this?
They got a convertible house, bro.
Nigga was like, let me open
he
this.
He said, my bathtub lift up, my walls do a 360.
360, my nigga, like, for real.
My favorite part was when he talked about Charlie, because like that was the one time
I saw that too.
Where he didn't cry, but he definitely cracked. He's like when he was like, "Yeah, I miss my brother." He was like, "It was."
I love their relationships.
It was really just seeing him like, man, like my brother is gone,
and knowing how fiercely Charlie protected him that's got to be such a loss.
Yeah.
Did y'all see the clip?
They didn't laugh.
Yeah. Did they show this clip or have y'all seen the clip where Charlie was doing Howard Stern and Howard was trying to get him to like say, he like kept saying, you're not jealous of him? You're not whatever.
I saw the clip and they was like, I'm absolutely
Charlie was like, I'd be ready to fuck somebody up there. And then they showed the part from, what was that, Raw? Where somebody was like, somebody shouted, do such and such. And Charlie's in the back like, shut up, bitch. And like, and Eddie just breaks down, like, I love their
relationship. You know what else was interesting to me that most people wouldn't get? Val Young, who was she's his housekeeper.
Oh, okay.
She's been with him since then.
Yeah.
I don't think she's a housekeeper. I think she's Young just up like on the screen,
house manager.
Like, she's probably the house manager.
I don't think he
washed in his drawers, but
she making sure everything's running.
Young on the screen, I was like, Val Young? And then he talked about he met up through Rick, and she's been with him. He said she's the last one left out of all the people.
Which I think...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, which I think is dope, because one of the things that he does not seem to have in his life, which is very, very rare for people of that magnitude, is there's not a lot of in and out. I used to work for Eddie.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, no.
Right? Either you do or you did not.
Right.
Exactly.
It was also, for me, I think what was incredible and almost like genius thinking is him having the foresight to be like, oh, I'm not doing any drugs. No. I'm not drinking at all. I'll stay at Rick's house this weekend, but I'm going in the studio.
Right. Yeah.
Which at 18, 19, like, who says that?
Well, probably because he was watching everybody else around him fall the fuck apart. That's what I would guess, anyway.
That measure of discipline, that ability to be in a room and not... And also, you know, I think, you know, I wouldn't say it's common, obviously, but I definitely feel like, you know, there are people who are around shit like that and they're just not really interested. It doesn't really, you know, move the needle.
It's probably why he's still so sharp, though.
Yeah. Definitely why he can remember shit like the date from some random show in 1977.
But I also feel like, yes, the discipline, but also, I mean... Think about the time that him and Richard really got cool. Like, Richard was on the other side. He was trying to come out. You know what I'm saying? Richard is, like, trying to situate his shit. So he was probably like, yo, this is going to fuck you up. Like, stay away from each other. Like, he probably got, like, some really heavy warnings, I would think, also.
He said he smoked a joint for the first time. He's, like, 30-something.
That's wild.
I didn't do nothing.
So this is what happens. Every time I go to Netflix, ironically, Netflix has never... put Eddie's doc on the my suggestions. Yeah, so every time I go to Netflix to watch Eddie, I get distracted and end up watching something else because I forget what I went in there for. Because they don't put it on the screen. They didn't put it on the thing. Something else pops up and I'd be like, oh, I was going to watch this. But I have two questions. Did Johnny Gill show up?
No.
And was Arsenio in it?
No. Oh, yes.
Arsenio was very limited.
A little bit.
He talked, and what I really loved about Arsenio was that it didn't turn into the whole my best friend bit. Like, it really just was like him talking about Eddie and really sort of the challenges that Eddie was facing as they were trying to pit him and Richard against one another. And he tapped into that. And I'm sure there's a ton of other footage that they just didn't, they just edited out or whatever. But no, Johnny wasn't there. They did not mention the transgender.
Yeah, I figured that.
And you know, obviously as time has gone on.
It's a flip.
I think he really was just giving someone a ride. You know what I'm saying? I really do. I mean, because if that's your bag, right, it doesn't just stay hidden for 30 plus years. I mean, this happened 30
years ago. And it ain't a one-time thing.
You know what I'm saying? And whatever, right? I'm not here to ask him, it's not something to make that shit shouldn't even be in the documentary. Yeah,
right. And I saw some people trying to be like, well, he still did XYZ, and it's like, who the fuck cares? Like,
I mean, Eddie
has- I will say this, it almost impacted Eddie's trajectory, because I still do believe that the reason that Eddie would do nothing but them kid movies for a while is because he didn't want to have to go on press runs for grown-up movies, because he didn't want to address it. But like, again, it's been so long.
And I think too, I think he had kind of gone into that genre. I think he had small kids. Mm-hmm. So he's actually in that space. Obviously he's not on tour doing dick jokes.
Right.
So he was just in a very, very different space. But anybody that, first of all, having a career in entertainment, I mean, a real career, I mean, like a actual career for 40 something years is fucking
crazy.
It's unreal. It very rarely happens when you look at the numbers, the sheer volume of people attempting to do that and the people who succeed at doing it is so few and far between. And also being able to do it at a high level on both ends of the spectrum, right? Like on both ends of that. He's great when he's young. There's really not a lot of ascension. There's not a lot of hill to climb. Like, he fucking shoots out.
He's great. Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
They won. Fucking won.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so when you hear him talk and you hear sort of this, you almost get the sense that he was a tad bit isolated in that he wasn't necessarily brought in and befriended by the elder statesman.
Right.
But whether it was Cosby sort of digging in his ass about his language, or Richard being a little, he talked about this on the show with Jerry, Richard being a little apprehensive.
Or shit, even Rodney Dangerfield, that little Rodney story Dangerfield told.
Telling him, Rodney Dangerfield. So all of those sorts of things, right? And when you think about it and you look at his body of work and you look at the fact that people are still interested.
Yeah.
People are still interested.
Nigga, if a ticket drops today,
I have to understand me?
On that 100%. Amex.
We going to see
Eddie. Who's not trying to go see Eddie? Because the last time Eddie did stand up, I was too young to go see Eddie. Like, who's not trying to go see Eddie?
Same.
My mother-in-law is 92. There are two people that she asked to watch on TV. Nikki Parker. She loves the Parker. Put on Nikki Parker for me, and anything Eddie Murphy.
The fact that she called the whole show Nikki Parker.
I kid you not, I could put on
cut on Nikki Parker. I can hear
she will sit and watch anything Eddie Murphy. The only movie she doesn't like that Eddie did was Life.
I love it.
Only
Life is so fuck. Me and Trav have been having this conversation.
Well, that was because
that is a horror film.
It's a terrible movie, right? But it's really more the language. But I could sit her out. We'll put on Beverly Hills Cop.
She's good.
Good to go. Will not move. She's straight.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I just want to Just wanted to say, Beverly Hills Cop 3 gets a lot of hate, and that is a good movie.
All right. This
Was that the
I just
one they
wanted to
just
say that.
did? Because I enjoyed
That
that. It
was
was
the
fun.
one at the amusement park.
Four was the
Oh.
one they did.
And shout out to Teresa Randall.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that
But
one.
yo, I got one little shout out, and
Okay.
that is to all of the Quest Bridge finalists. So I heard about this thing called Quest Bridge, where you put in an application to, it's like applying for college, right? You get accepted to this program and you become a finalist. And out of the 7,250 finalists, all of them get matched with a university for a full ride scholarship for
Oh,
whatever they
wow.
study. And you apply once and then you just like kind of put it in the air. And I've been seeing these kids, video their opening their notification or whatever. These kids are getting into Yale full rides, Rice University, Pace University.
That's
Colleges I
dope.
never heard of that are in this program. And it's basically like you don't have to be 4.0, 4.8 GPA with all these extracurriculars. It's like, what's your essay? What's your story? What is your, you know what I mean? What do you want to do to like change the world? And it's like literally changing these kids' lives. Like,
Oh, that's
I
dope.
don't know how it's funded or anything like that, but just
I'm about to
seeing
go research it.
all these kids get like a chance like this. If something like this was around when I was 17 and coming out of high school, I might be a different kid right now or a different person right now. Like, it's a very cool thing to see, and I'm glad that,
That sounds very dope.
TikTok
I
is
got one shout out
pushing
before we
that.
wrap up. I want to shout out to K-pop Demon Hunters.
You finally
I
watched
still
it?
haven't watched
I watched
them.
it a while ago, actually. Oh, you got it. It's first of all, it's amazing. The movie's amazing. Like they have found a way to like really match kid themes, adult themes, like obviously, the supernatural themes with the music, which is everything is like a 10, 11 out of 10. The
Yeah.
animation, the story, like, and they created this world. I saw a report about they created this world because I think the numbers on the music charts and the streaming charts are like, see, astronomical. And they created this world where it'll keep going because these three characters become stars individually. There's a boy band who's like a demon band, and they become stars. It's just really. I always talk about the Koreans. That it's just really well done, and it's a dope story. Like, so piece of K-pop Demon Hunter, and the music is dope. The songs are great, so please watch it. I can't believe you haven't watched it with Inka.
I haven't watched it yet either. I started it
But
Monday
I
and
be Inka.
stopped.
I haven't. I can't believe that.
We watched
That might be
those
overstimulating
two
perhaps.
things. There's a lot going on. Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be
Two
something.
episodes of a show, and she watches them over and over again. She's not into new things, which I
Okay.
appreciate.
Respectful,
Dang, girl.
respectfully,
I want
respectfully.
to give a quick. I want to give. I watched the Kevin Hart special.
I couldn't get through it, man. I tried.
Wanted to. I really. I wanted to point this out because I feel like so. Kevin is very polarizing in a way that I think is honestly a little weird. I think,
Weird, because I like him.
yeah, and people do this thing, and we have this thing where everybody does this. I've never found this person
I
funny.
know he was funny. He was funny.
And okay,
Somebody was watching.
all right, right, okay, whatever,
Yeah.
my nigga. All right, so I will say this: it's sort of back to the Eddie point. I think Kevin might be at the point where he can't really work out.
I can see that.
His last two specials have really fallen flat, and flat in a way that has that really reeks of
You didn't test this material.
you didn't test this material. You are operating in a bit of a bubble. You're operating in a bit of a siloed environment, and also you're operating with no real fresh young writer comedians around
You can
you.
tell.
Your content feels very old, and by old out I mean your delivery, like the delivery of the jokes. Like a lot of the jokes were very, it felt like he just kind of took it from social media, like ginger ale is in medicine, and it's like all of the sort of type of shit that we've kind of joked about. And it's kind of weird when you see that, and it's like you're not even as funny at like my timeline was way better with that joke than you
Yeah.
are. So that was a little difficult. Look, Kevin's a megastar.
Comedy, he's gonna be fine.
Comedy is like, ultimately, comedy is his part-time gig now, right?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I was surprised to see him even drop a new special, because my theory on Kevin had always been that he knew he had an expiration date, which is why he would do any and everything. And it was, to me, it was like, I'm gonna get all this shit while I can get it, right? That's where I always thought it was coming from. And maybe it was initially, and then he got to another place with it. Because even, like, he did the joint over the pandemic that he taped at his house or whatever. And that one, to me, I watched it, and it was the first Kevin Hart special that no quotes came out of. Like, nobody was quoting.
Yeah.
Nothing. Like, there wasn't no, you gonna learn today. There was no, all right, all right, all right. There was no, nigga, help me help you. There was no, you know what I'm saying? Like, there was nothing. Pineapples, none of that. Like, there was nothing, right?
Muffin cap, back blue.
Yeah, so like, I'm not gonna say I didn't think Kevin was funny. I thought he was funny, but I thought he was like a specific kind of funny. I didn't feel like he took a whole lot of time, like, developing the comedy, which is fine, right? Everybody ain't got it. We need different ranges. But now, I'm just kind of like, are you doing, like, do you still love it? Like, because you can do your quips.
I feel like he did it because he got to deal with Netflix. He has to complete.
He has to complete it. Somebody was saying comedians don't do bits anymore. They just do lines. They just do one. Like, they don't take time to set up a bit. Like, one to come back to. Yeah, and I think that's maybe. Yeah, that something has a call. And Kevin was at least good at that. Mm-hmm. Like, the first couple specials, I think maybe that's what he's falling into right now. Like,
I think you don't get to work out on it, right? You don't get to go practice it like a bit,
right?
In order to do that, there is a succinct way you have to have jokes continually line into one another,
and you got to figure out the timing and the pacing.
And timing and delivery is, you know, particularly important. The last thing I do want to say is they did a lot of crowd shots, okay? And let's just say
they were repeating crowd shots.
That was not the same crowd that was in his earlier.
That too, yeah, that too.
Right, and I think that there's
the white folks out there.
I mean. There, not only was the white folks out there, but there was very much that old, you ever see them old Hispanics who kind of like, they be presenting as white, but it's like, oh, cut the shit. Yeah, you know, it's like that. It was a lot of them.
It was very
LA. Yeah.
It was taped in Miami.
Okay.
So it was very, you know, there was some black folks, but it was very.
The Cubans.
It was very.
It wasn't us.
Say this without being. It was a little hoity-toity. Like, if you went to some of them homes, it was probably cucumber sandwiches. And kids don't really eat them kind of snacks, and you know,
it was. It was maybe an audience. It was maybe an audience who hasn't actually. They definitely didn't see Soul Plane, and they haven't seen Kevin's first two specials.
Yes, and I think that Kevin, and I think that's fine, right? Like your. I think also too in Miami, it's a tourist place, right? So it's very heavily with people from different areas coming in. You kind of go and listen, it costs some bread, right? Like, nigga, he's not filming that shit at like the Comedy Cellar
Even the choice to film in Miami is interesting to me, because black comedians choose to tape the special. Says a lot. Even Chris taped the King's Theater. You know what I'm saying? Like, you choose the audience that you know is going to be with you.
That's what I was going to lean into, right? Like, right. There are very specific places that you go to do comedy specials. Miami has never been one of them.
Mm.
New York, Philly, Chicago, LA.
Detroit,
like they're very, you know, Baltimore, like that's where you fucking go, and to me it was indicative of a person who is like, this is not really their main focus,
right?
And this is kind of what I do because I'm good at it. It's kind of like what I like to say when you see NBA players, and we always kind of like, you know, this nigga's not really playing hard. He's not. It's like, I don't really love this shit, nigga. I'm 6'9" and I'm super athletic and I make fucking $25 million a year.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to live this shit every day.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I want to do tech. I want to do whatever. You know right. what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, kind of what we're seeing. And I think that he should probably, before he really sort of tarnishes everything in this space, is probably just take a quick break.
I'll fall back for a little bit.
Just fall back from the stand-up portion. Mm-hmm. And I think Kevin is funny. I think he could be a little slapsticky at times. I think that the fucking I'm short joke is
yeah.
okay. We get it,
he's
my nigga.
Funny, like, though. Like, he has the timing. Think about that. That damn when he was talking to Don Cheadle.
That's what I'm saying. And that's what I'm saying. He could get that off. There's a lot of space. Because he was on... Was it with Carmelo? He was on something. I wonder, was it with Carmelo Anthony? It was with Carmelo on somebody, but he was talking about how he can't do all that, get ready with me and follow me, because he was like, hey, you got to put the camera down. You got to do the thing. You got to set the camera. I can't. I got to wear the other. And I related to that, because I was like, I'm not. That's why I don't do these things. So I'm like, who did you put the camera down on the aisle in Target and walk away? Yeah. What is what if somebody take your camera? You know what I mean? So it's like, it's that type of shit, right? You
put it in the wild.
You put it in a parking lot while you were loading your stuff in the truck. Mm-hmm. What is that? Mm-hmm. So that was funny to me. But I guess that's my thing, is like, he can clearly get his shit off in other spaces. I feel like stand up is one of those things where it's like, kind of like rapping. Like, if you don't love it, we can tell you don't love it.
Gotta do that shit. Like,
rap. Like, if you're not having a good time, we can tell you don't want to be here. You just here so you don't get fined. Like, nigga, we can tell.
If you're not having a good time, we're not gonna have a good time.
It felt very much like it felt like I'm gonna make these white people laugh. Like,
right.
Right, like it definitely. There was not
like damn, come on, you know, like
not a joke for us, right? Like, and you know, look, I get it. You evolve, your crowd evolves, but you know, look, I do. I just wanted to say that because I do feel like people be a little extra with Kevin in a way that's just like, wholly unnecessary,
like easy pickings type thing. You know, that's just,
I never found them funny. Like, here we go. Like, niggas today. I'm going to just go off on topic a little bit. Niggas today talking crazy about Ciroc. Nigga, we was outside, nigga.
Everybody was drinking.
Everybody. All the flavors.
I still have Ciroc on my bar because it's not finished yet, and I'm not going to throw it away just because this nigga's
wild. Have the peach one.
I will still go buy Blackberry Ciroc. Watch me, because I fuck with that shit.
Niggas coming over, shit. I'm probably going to get the pineapple over here, mm-hmm. just in case.
Why not? And you know what? Half that bottle at least will be gone by the time niggas leave.
Yes, and my goose will be untouched. Mm-hmm. Like, I like it. The other thing I wanted to mention is Married to Medicine is back, and Real Housewives of Potomac is having a season.
Really?
And I had left that show, but I came back.
You're back.
It is phenomenal.
I haven't tapped in it. I haven't tapped in it either. I've been watching Love and Marriage Huntsville.
There is a new villain in on Potomac, and she's not doing a good job. The new girl Stacy, though, is eating everybody up. Obsessed.
I'm gonna tap this to talk out. About it. So that's it. We're gonna wrap up the last.
I wanted to give a shout out to the new Daylight album. See, I'd be forgetting. Yeah. It's been so long since
Cabin in the Sky.
I want to give a shout out to the new Daylight album. Mm-hmm. I also want to give a quick shout out to Sean Stockman's On That Note podcast. Is my
so good.
It's one of my favorite. It's so good.
Really good.
It's so good. And honestly, it has elevated my opinion of Sean by leaps and bounds.
He was my least favorite boy to men.
Same.
And now.
Now.
I like
Nate that. Is still my favorite, even though there's literally no reason for him to be, because it's like, we don't even hear from Nate. He's just always been my favorite. But now with Sean, I'm like, all right, you funny.
Good.
You ask good questions. You be playing guitar with people. Like,
I'm going to go to that tour.
I plan to, because you know New Edition's on. I be some going.
Trav called it the old nigga tour.
It is the old nigga tour, and that's why I'm going, because I am an old nick. Like, I'm an old. I don't know why Trav be trying to front like he's not also an old nigga. Trav got old.
He's not.
Like,
he's
nigga, just because you can run a 2.5, doesn't mean you're not an old nigga.
You're just an old, in shape nigga.
That's all.
Ran 10 miles in 76 minutes. I still will never get over that.
Nobody needs to do that in life. It's not a reason.
Not on 38-year-old.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's no reason. He's showing off. but I wanted to shout out the On That Note podcast. And I just, this was a while ago, but we haven't taped in a while. I just want to give a shout out to my dear friend, John Legend, for actually managing to get Lauryn Hill on stage at a show.
While
she was an hour late to where she was supposed to be in the set. But the show wasn't over. And she was in great energy. And she, looked like she was having a good time. And I saw it and I was like, okay, when we see clips of Lauryn live, it's always, I feel like, bad clips. Like, it her...
contentious.
Like, yeah, it's always she's like, there. She's mad, yeah. She's angry, her voice is failing. But I was like, here, though? Yeah. But for the two, she did that thing, and she did
everything.
Yeah, she did everything. And I was like, I get it. I get why people, from that alone, I was like, I can get why people want to go see her. If this is what she gives the majority of the time versus what we end up seeing online, that was a fun show. So those were the three things I kind of had on my heart that I needed.
Shout out to Prize for getting convicted. Fraud charge. I don't know when that nigga's coming home. I heard God damn.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I had something else too, but I don't know.
You can't do it. Them white people do. Okay, sorry.
At all. Rest in peace to my Uncle Larry, the comedian of the family.
Okay, Uncle Larry.
His funeral was high black theater. We had people falling out.
I love it.
Take me with you.
That's right.
Amazing. Like, someone broke out into song during the remarks, and it was
hilarious,
but also like everybody joined in, and then we were all crying.
Of course.
This is why black people ask, how was the funeral? Because it might have been completely entertaining like that, or you might have had that stud that's been going viral singing at everybody's funeral.
Yes.
Like, I just got this one thing to say. What is it? I just got to say this. Whatever that is. She'd be singing her ass off. She booked and busy.
Anka, who did the body?
Reese did the body. Come on now.
Did he look asleep? He looked just like himself.
He had on a nice suit. You know, his my cousin played football in the NFL and then arena football for a while. And so, like, one of his championship rings, like, he tucked in the casket. And that was a whole, like, it was like chef's kiss. I mean, folded flag on top of the joint from his army service. Like, all the things happened.
I love it.
And it was magical. And I love my family for
I love a good black funeral. It really does feed a good black home going. It really does feed my soul. Yes. A good black
family
home.
Wear white, old, quiet.
Oh, I love it. I love it when the family wears white. That's perfection. I love it.
It was perfect.
Uncle Larry left his wishes behind.
He did. He was just
that late. Was a
I am going on home now. Y'all be good. But yeah, it was great. It was, you know,
rest in peace, Uncle Larry, but I definitely need at least two casket jumpers at my funeral. If I'm going
home. Well, I told you the problem is Jordan will escort anybody up out of there who tries to act a fool at your funeral. I need you.
Jordan ain't even gonna let me sit in the middle.
I'm definitely
gonna be like, y'all gotta calm all that down.
Yeah, she's definitely gonna be that.
Jordan gonna be like one program per person.
And for Jordan also gonna be like, if you're not on the program, don't come up here.
Exactly. You are not coming up.
Keep your remarks for 2 minutes.
I didn't get a program. They were so strict. I was like, all right, man. She's like, does your mother have one? I was like, all right.
Just they just get one per family.
I was like, all right,
B. One per family. I'm chilling. That's a real black
thing.
Listen, they went to Kinko's and paid for the double sided trifold. We ain't got time to be hiding.
The white gloves. Like, ooh, they was not fucking around. Rest in peace. It was weird because it was like you expect him to walk in at any moment.
Right.
He's like the guy that be singing at everybody's funerals. But
so y'all waiting and it's his
just waiting.
I get that.
Anywho.
So we're wrapping it up. That's the end of the year.
Also, shout out to Inca's Elf. I know Elf on a Shelf is cracking in the house right now.
Oh, no, ma'am.
You don't do Elf on a Shelf?
Why the fuck would I?
I don't know why I thought you did Elf on a Shelf.
I'm going to get up 20 minutes earlier just to, like, every day.
For some reason, I know you do the advent calendar. My friend Sharice does Elf on a Shelf. Okay.
Yes. Okay. 20 days until Christmas.
And gotcha.
She getting her little candy or cookie in a few minutes.
God bless her.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see y'all in the Tuesday. Well, man, hold on. Y'all, maybe we can come back before. Maybe we can do a verse.
We should.
It'll be a Christmas
special
miracle.
Christmas episode.
Yeah.
It'll be a Christmas miracle.
Yeah, we're going to do one for Christmas time.
All right. And because I think me and Mom are going to go see Wicked for Good at some point, so I'll have a review or something. A little review.
I am too, but they so fucking weird now. I'm turned off. Everybody eat a sandwich and calm down. All this crying and touching and shit.
And the Asian lady done got involved. She lost all that weight too.
Everybody's too skinny. I don't know.
No craft services.
Lord. All right, y'all.
We'll see y'all soon.
All right.
Later.